This is side two of cassette 6.29.95-RE, the interview with Judge Irwin. And we were talking about his elevation to the federal bench in 1980.
Helm said, let's see, I'll have someone, I was interfering with his right to work law. And a man by the name of East had beat Morgan. And he was crying about it. So finally, Helm said, I got to see him. And then I went to see him. And he had a nice little kid who was helping him, but he didn't understand. The only thing I did, they had to write the work law in the statute and still in the statute. I just said, here's what I did, Senator. I put a semicolon here and a comma, a semicolon. And then I say, provided that a union may bargain that the employer pay a portion of the bargaining, the collective bargaining fee, if there's a union. In other words, what they'd have, a union bargaining for contract. There would be 250 members in the union, 50 of them were non-union people. So they got all the benefits, but they didn't pay anything to cost of bargaining. And that's what I was driving at. So he's fussing about that. And I told him, I had my little article with him. I said, now, Senator, you have to bear in mind now. Everybody in my county knew I was going to do that. And I showed him where that I had a little document where it was announced, you know, how the labor union put out a little document with Urban and so forth and so on. And I said, now, this came out on such and such a day, and I want to show you who I got contribution for after that. And I had about everybody felt that they should give me a contribution, gave me one. And he didn't say too much about that. And they still didn't. See, the way I was boxed in, once you are appointed, the president's judiciary, president would send a nomination to the judiciary committee. The Judiciary Committee would send a nomination to each senator from your state along with a blue card. And the senator must return that blue card in order to get voted upon. And he was holding a blue card. And that's how we got into it. But I finally got it and went ahead and got elected.
Did you think Helms's professed concern about this effort you made to introduce this amendment to a piece of legislation was an honest concern, or just red herrings?
No. That was an honest concern in him, because he was anti-labor.
Sure. But there was also the question of trying to hold up the appointments so that Reagan would...
Yeah, well, that started out in Detroit. First time I heard it was Senator Thurmond on the radio, and he said, we got to say some of these appointments of President Reagan. Hell, I didn't pay that any attention. Finally, somebody said, Richard, that's serious. And then came there where I think about eight or ten minorities were ready to be confirmed, women and black. And what did Jesse say? Jesse had made a statement with reference to me. No, he had. No. Andrew Young made a statement. They just holding us up because they're black. And they used my name. And Jesse got mad. Thought I said what Andrew Young said. But hell, I didn't know what Andrew said until somebody sent me the language, and it was a statement made in California. So that kind of disturbed other Democrats. And I think that's the reason I finally went to committee. Steve Breyer, now in the Supreme Court, was chairman of he was attorney for the Judiciary Committee that I came by. And he had told me we were going to take the nomination up next week. And no question about it. In my mind, they weren't going to take it up. Say, just be cautious. Don't do anything. And finally, Jesse sent a man down here to interview me. Going to find out about that statement. I told him, no. I didn't know anything about the statement until I was called. And he couldn't make any hay out of that. When it came on, I got a call on a Monday morning. Say, we're going to take up the nomination today. Hang around the telephone. And I called Senator Morgan's office. He was down here in I want to say Wake County, but he wasn't as though in Granville County, campaigning. Mm-hmm. And I finally got him. By the time I got him, well, I'd already been confirmed. And that was amazing.
Did you have any second thoughts at the time the appointment was the nomination was offered? Were you fully interested in moving onward in a career in the judiciary, or did you still have some ambitions to?
No, I think I would. I would like to have stayed in the North Carolina system. At least I thought that, but that was a mistake. The best move I ever made was going to the federal system. It was. Money, salary was high. You had more authority, more staff, whatnot. It's the best thing to do is be in the federal court. Mm-hmm. It's a little hard, but you can do it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask a few questions about, are there other things, this has sort of taken us up through 1980, are there events or experiences or other things that we haven't touched on across that first 15 years of our conversation that are important ones as you tell the story of that time?
I don't think so.
I guess you were on the Court of Appeals at the time the state took up the ERA question in the legislature.
No, I was in the General Assembly.
You were? Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about how that issue played out?
It was voted down. A man by the name of Campbell, who ran a radio station from down, I guess he was in Nash County. He was one of the, he was the leader against the ERA. And it came up from vote, and the negative people who were against it won. It was just that bad. They had a senator who kind of acted a little foolish. I think someone called him of importance. It could have been, who was it? I don't know whether it was Ford's wife or not. But that kind of gave him a big head, and he just went right down the tube. And when he went down, they just didn't have enough votes.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand that. Betty Ford called?
Yes. I called a man by the name of Combs. And I don't remember all the details of it, but I know it was substantial talk about it. And I think, let's put it this way. He was told by a person very close to him, don't vote for ERA, and he didn't vote for it.
What do you think explained the most of the opposition to ERA?
In North Carolina, I think it's two things. One, the people really did not understand what the amendment would do. And two, I think the men were afraid that it would hurt them eventually. And it has. You might have heard about the white men was angry. That's the reason they voted the way they did in 1994. They were angry, but they weren't angry black folks. They gave that impression, but I think they were mad at white women because the white women the one who took their jobs. Black folks didn't take white men's jobs. White women did. And they just put the anger on us rather than on the right source.
I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the developments during the decade of the 80s when the political landscape in North Carolina is substantially reworked. Jim Martin is elected in 84, again in 88. Liston Ramsey is ousted in 89 as Speaker of the House by a much more conservative Democrat who works to build a coalition with Republican members of the Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, more recent events, the trend has only been consolidated. Can you share your reflections about the forces that have been at work across these years to lead to that sort of realignment?
Well, the control of the General Assembly for many, many years were the representatives and senators from small districts in the state. They got in, stayed a long time, chairman of the committee, and had the power. Liston fitted in that category. And the other thing against Liston was he was the first speaker to serve more than one term in I don't know how many years. So he served two. And he was thinking about serving three when they decided you had enough. I think it's kind of Liston's fault that he didn't see that he wasn't going to make it. And he didn't. That had some bearing on it. And other areas where there used to be Republicans and small Democrats in small counties, that started going to Republicans. And that moved the basis of the leadership into urban and metropolitan areas, which the rank and file small county voters did not like. And that's the way it came by. Martin beat Skipper Bowles, and he was able to save two terms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we had a strong candidate to run against Martin.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a candidate, and he didn't do well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, and then the Republicans picked up, well, the country picked up Republican presidents. That's helped Republicans. We didn't get a Republican governor was one of the worst things we had that aided Democrats, well, pushing Democrats out of their position. And after all that was said and done, we got into a real controversy as far as political parties are concerned.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, in your sense, within North Carolina, what has explained the increasing willingness of traditional Democratic voters, blue-collar voters, white blue-collar voters, to cross over and become sort of, you know, Reagan Democrats, and more recently, maybe even they're more openly identifying as Republicans?
Well, as used to be one a two man in Winston-Salem would say. That's what happened. The Democrats started making money and changed the Republicans. Now, they argue that. Now, whether or not that's true, I don't know. I know in some events they were. But I think that had something to do with it. And then they start talking about social programs, whatever that is. I think that had some bearing on people becoming.
Mm-hmm. You're thinking of, say, the appeal in the political arena to such issues as affirmative action and school busing and abortion.
Busing had something to do with it. Affirmative action, I don't think it had that much to do with it because most people didn't know what it was. And most people don't understand affirmative action today. Most white people think affirmative action means that you're going to give this black man this job and then you're going to give him a lift to get him in the job. Not qualified, but they're going to lift his qualification to get him in. But that's not affirmative action. Affirmative action is equal opportunity. And once they get there, both of them should have about the same qualifications. But it never was explained that way. It's not explained that way now.
Mm-hmm. Well, this suggests an interesting question. What's your measure of the way in which the Democratic Party ultimately dealt with the whole question of race?
About like most Southerners. They weren't much different than Republicans. Just enough to get by. And race is serious today. Look at O.J. Johnson, O.J. Simpson's trial. Race is very important. And we've had some, too. I've had that case where two black women said, if you're going to convict the black man and not the white man, we're not going to convict anyone. And they did. That's how important race is. Still important. One thing I noticed that the Southern Baptists decided that they were going to try to get religion again, and I thought that was well taken. But they're going to have to do more than that. It was right. If you go to church on Sunday morning, I don't know where you go or not, but I go to church on Sunday morning. I don't see any white people in the congregation I'm in. Maybe occasionally. And if I go out on the west side, I wouldn't see many black people on the west side in church. Something has to be done to bring blacks and whites together to the extent that at least they can get along.
Let me ask you about redistricting.
Yes.
And the issue that has been litigated out is Shaw versus Reno.
Yes.
What's your view about the... Well, how... Give me your sense of those developments and your judgments about them.
Yes, Shaw versus Reno was decided wrong, but the General Assembly there did what they should have done. And I tell you why. They don't tell you. One morning, after I came back from World War II, I decided I'd go down and register the boat. Hell, I didn't get registered that day. It took me 2 years to get registered. And the strangest thing about it, I knew the party chairman, everybody knew me. So on this particular day in 1946, when I was going back, 43 was my first experience, 46 was my second experience. We went down, everything lined up, said, they're not going to be in trouble. Carry people down and get them arrested. We did. And we had a checkup meeting. And one guy came up and said, they wouldn't register me. I knew him. We were in number 2 precinct, and he was in number 1, or either number 3. So he called the county manager. He said, oh, hell, take him back next week. I forgot to tell the register to let him go. Now, that's how bad it was. Now when Shaw gets Reno, everybody's up in arm. Hell, I think it was well done. General Assembly creating 2 black districts. Not going to hurt white people. Hell, they all got to go to Congress and get everything through Congress. And our people are not doing well. Our people from North Carolina, is not doing well getting them through.
Mm-hmm. Do you make anything of the argument by supporters of increased numbers of African Americans making it to Congress? Mm-hmm. That there's been this odd and paradoxical result of creating majority-minority districts, namely that you pull off enough black voters from other districts that their politics shifts sharply to the right.
Yeah, well, that's fine. They didn't even let us vote. Hell, I don't feel bad about that. Hell, it should have been fair from the beginning. They wouldn't have had the problem. When I went down to vote, they weren't concerned about one black person voting. Now, they are concerned about it now because Congress Watts district. Mm-hmm. He has his district lined up to the extent about everybody around his district are going to be Republicans.
That's what the Democrats don't like.
Mm-hmm. What do you think have been the most important figures behind the scenes orchestrating this shift for the Republican Party across the last 10 or 15 years? Who do you think have been the most important Republican political figures across those years here in North Carolina?
I don't know. I'd have to say Jesse. And there was a man, Barhill. You ever heard his name? From up in Illinois? He stayed in the House a long time. I think those two had some effect on it, plus whoever they could relate to. Mm. And I cannot say for the life of me who would have been that person mm-hmm. in Forsyth County.
Mm-hmm. What's your sense of the state of the health of the state Democratic Party these days?
It's all right. It's a little weak, but they're coming back. If they don't, they won't be a Democratic Party for a long time.
You said it's weak. What is it that you're thinking of when you think that it's not as strong as it could be? Other than the obvious.
I see. They let the Republicans talk about the contract with the people. I don't know. I don't think it's a contract with people. But hell, you can't tell many people that it's not a contract with people. They talk about what they're going to do. They're going to do cut the budget, and they're going to have this. You know, that's what a lot of people want to hear. And you can't do much with that until the people decide we had enough of it, or we're not going to pay any attention anymore. And that's the reason I say the Democratic Party is weak. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the way I look at it, and I'm kind of afraid about this. The government is starting cutting government employees. The private sector start cutting employees. It's going to come a time that the number of people working is not going to be able to do what the state feels or the federal government feels that it should do. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing is, block grant to the state. Why in the world would one give a block grant to the state? If the state needs the money, let them tax for the money. And don't let the federal government tax the money and give it away. That's not right. That's not right. Mm-hmm. But what can I do about it other than talk?
What's your sense of the state of the state of black politics currently in North Carolina? Who would you identify as the key figures, and maybe not just the obvious ones, but folks working behind the scenes as well?
Can't do that. I don't know them that well. Now, a judge is not supposed to be in politics. They say, now, you got a robe. You go over and cover yourself up in that robe and stay where it's sent for you. It's hard to say. I don't know when I have been to a meeting where I could get the bottom line facts suggesting that you asked me. Mm-hmm. I wish I could. I just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Are there things we haven't talked about that emerge sort of sharply in your mind and your memory as you think back on the state's political developments over these years?
We mentioned integration and political development. Mm-hmm. That was a major factor. It's something politician could hang the head on, hang behind it. And if you were against integration, that's about like the old Ku Klux Klan, but you had on a suit. And that was a real bad situation. And of course, integration never did work. Never had an opportunity to work. When a black child go to school, they're going to put him over in the corner. Let's treat about like it did, separate but equal. So that was a kind of a blow, in my opinion, mm-hmm. to the state and the people of the state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was the Winston-Salem experience with?
Bad. Bad. The chairman of the Board of Education, you might have heard Bill Moretti, a lawyer, and he decided to integrate the schools and handed it. And he ended up with a statement from Governor Barnett of Mississippi. And I forgot what he said, but that was a hell of a way to end the speech, talking about integration school system.
When would this have been around? What year?
I had, must have been early 70s. Mm-hmm. Early 70s. I wasn't on the, either, mm-hmm. I wasn't on either board at that time. Mm-hmm. At least I'm sure I wasn't on the local board. I was still on the state board.
Did you think that there was a chance that was missed for political leadership at the state level that could substantially have altered the course of events that you've just been describing here, sure, in Winston?
Sure. At the, I'd say white leadership, because they were the only one in charge. Mm-hmm. Had white leadership been fair and just could open one eye, we would never had all the problems we've had, because they should have been able to give the leadership that would have avoided the situation. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't do it, and that's why we're in the predicament we're in now. Now, our school board here, we have problem of redistricting. It's just about like the time when they decided they would integrate schools, going back through the same old problem, same old vote that keep people disturbed. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. These events made you, what have they done to your sense of how these issues might work out in the years to come?
I wished I had, well, I guess I'm a kind of a positive type feeling person, more affirmative than a negative. But at one time, I thought they might work out all right. But now, after some recent decision of the Supreme Court, I don't think we ever be able to work them out. We're going to have the same problem for a long time to come. And probably government sponsor. That's about the best I can say about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you anticipate that, what's your sense of how the economic fortunes of blacks have been changed, say, through the long-term impact of the Civil Rights Act and Title VII, for example?
What was your first question?
How much difference have things like Title VII and the Civil Rights
Act? No, that wasn't, you said something about fortune, didn't you?
How much have black economic fortunes changed as a result of things like, yeah, Title VII?
Fortune is a word I was concerned about. It's changed some, but not a hell of a lot. See, the problem is everything is not governmental. And things are not governmental. Job may be vacant next door. And black and whites living separately, the black person never hear about the job, because a white person going to get his friend and take him up and get the job. That's the reason I say the country's going to be racist in that area for a long time to come. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Other things that you'd like to?
No.
Okay. Well, Judge, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.